Numpty here.
we won 4-0. Did we?
No, was it? was it no 3-0?
Take that drink away from me.
Oh dear. Right, okay.
No, it was 4-0.
Was it? I thought it was 3.
4-0. I was fucking right. Didn't he take the drink away from me? Right, start that by again. Up steps Tavernier, captain. I was going to say something stupid there. Captain. I don't know what I was going to say. Captain Penalty Fantastic or something. I don't know.
Right, okay, we'll go with that then. Captain Penalty Fantastic. I'm sure Craig McCrimmon will love that one there. There you go.
Exactly, yeah.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Hi everyone and welcome to the next episode of the iReady podcast. As ever, I'm your host Derek and with me is my co-host Dave. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm very well, Derek. How are you, mate?
I'm probably going to be even better than you because I've just finished up for 2 weeks and you'll leave now.
Oh, well, I'm off for another 2 days. I managed to get this weekend off, so it's not too bad, mate. Not too bad.
I mean, even more surprising is I'm doing something I don't normally do during recording podcasts and I'm having a beer.
Oh, really? Well, Derek, I'm not having a beer, but as you can maybe hear, I'll have a cheeky wee Pepsi Max just to start the podcast off.
Well, I've not actually had any beer for about 6 weeks because I've been on a health kick of late. Yeah. So I'm drinking Blue Moon. It's 5.4%, so I might be fleeing by the end of this.
Oh, definitely, mate. I know how much a lightweight you are. The thing that's worrying me, though, Derek, is not the fact you're a lightweight, is that you'll probably have to keep pausing the podcast and you go for a pee every 5 minutes.
Listen, I think you hold the record for that on
no, record. No, maybe on recording, but as I say, I used to be quite paranoid before about the amount of times that I was desperate for the toilet when I used to go out for a drink, until I started working with you and we started going out for a drink, and I thought, you know, I'm actually quite good at holding the toilet and when I'm going out for a drink, because you do hold the record for the amount of times that you've visited a toilet on a night out.
Who says I'm going for a pee? Yes, I'm generally drink a pint's worth and piss 5 pints worth back.
That's so. Definitely. So, especially the last time we went out, I sat half the night myself just because you were out of the toilet every 5 minutes. But I was expecting that, so it's all right.
It's just because I didn't like you, Dave. I didn't want to say. Yes, but anyway, we better get into more pressing things and some good results and performances we've got coming up. Obviously, the Aberdeen game and the Benfica game. So we'll go down the tunnel and onto the pitch. So the first game we've got to cover is on Sunday the 22nd of November. It was at home to Aberdeen where we won 4-0. So two changes from the Hamilton demolition of the previous game. We lined up McGregor, Tavernier, Goldson, Balogun, Barisic, Aribo, Jack, Arfield, Ken, Roof and Morelis. On the subs bench were McLaughlin, Bassey, Hellander, Hadji, Defoe, Davis, Itten, Kamara and Barker. So certainly what could have been a tricky game, Dave, we passed it with flying colours.
Derek, I was actually quite looking forward to this because we are playing extremely well at the moment. We knew that Aberdeen were going to be without a few players for various reasons. The only concern I had was it was the first game after the international break, and I'm always a wee bit concerned if, you know, we lose some sort of momentum and stuff like that. But thankfully, we didn't, and we went out and absolutely crushed them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just a great performance all round and ruthless. Yep. And we started off where we finished the Hamilton game, which was brilliant to see.
Yep.
On the third minute, lovely move on the right. He cuts, our player cuts inside, driving the ball. A lovely pass to Kent, who beats the offside trap. Kent gets a shot off, but the keeper was alert and narrowed the angle and saved with his leg from the corner. Really, from the off there, that should have been a goal, shouldn't it have been?
Exactly. It was straight away, Derek. It was great close control by Kent, and the ball that was played inside. I've got a feeling that it was Scott Arfield that played the ball into him. And as I say, he broke away clear for his man, and you're expecting Kent to burst the net with that, especially because it was quite close and only the keeper to save. But, unfortunately, he managed to pull off a good save away. But as you say, that was right at the very start of the game. And I think that just sort of showed Aberdeen, that we were there, we were meaning business, and we really didn't take our foot off the gas, did we, after that?
Absolutely not, because in the 14th minute, Kent ended up scoring and making it 1-0. We had lots of possession working the ball from the back. Jack loses out in the ball, but it falls to Kent, who took the ball forward, and from about 25 yards, he hits a shot, was going goal-bound, rebounds off the back of the Aberdeen defender, and curls into the bottom right corner off the post and in. Brilliant goal. Obviously, a wee bit of fortune there, but a deflection is still a goal at the end of the day.
It was, Derek. I mean, it was a great shot. I reckon if the keeper was going to save it, it was going to take an outstanding save. But it just took it that inch away from him and made certain. And you only actually saw the deflection when you were looking at it from sort of Kent's angle. Actually, when he hit the shot, it looked as if it was, a clean strike that he got on it. But as you say, any sort of shot that we're looking, that's what we're looking for. We've been crying out for just to have shots for the edge of the box all the time. We say it, constantly. I think you've said it more than any of us. These type of shots lead to goals. And, thankfully for us, it did end up in the back of the net. So, great start.
Absolutely. 18th minute, a completely baffling decision. Roof clearly taken out from behind in the box. No penalty given. we say it time and time again, it's the most penalty of penalties you've ever seen.
Yep.
And it wasn't given. I mean, clearly taken out. No attempt to play the ball. What was the deal with that?
I've got no idea, because, as I say, every single person said it was a blatant penalty. And when the guys on Sports Scene say it's a blatant penalty, Derek, then it was a blatant penalty. But it was a shocking decision there. Thankfully, it didn't matter and it didn't go against us during the game. But as you say, absolutely baffling.
Yeah. 23rd minute, quick break by Aberdeen, beats the offside trap, gets the ball on the left side of the box and gets a shot off, was going wide but no chances for McGregor, and palms it out for the corner. The resulting corner played right to the back post and McGregor had to push it away and was eventually cleared for another corner, this time on the other side. So certainly Aberdeen, they had a chance, It just shows you that we couldn't rest on the laurels. We had to be alert at all times, and fortunately we were.
Yep.
26 minute, Aberdeen played a quick ball forward. There was a tangle with the attacker and the centre-back in the middle of the park. The ball eventually comes to the Aberdeen player on the right side of the box, who has a shot, and McGregor puts it out for the corner. So again, quick succession there. They were a bit dangerous. However, 2 minutes after that, on the 28th minute, Roof made it 2-0. Goldson chips the ball over the defender to Roof on the right-hand side at the edge of the box, cuts the ball inside, drags three defenders with him with his right foot, and then a shot with his left foot into the back of the net. Just an outstanding goal from Roof there.
Yeah, we're getting used to it now, Derek. We're getting used to him scoring spectacular goals, and that certainly was. But certainly wasn't a sort of long-range shot, that he's become famous for doing. But his close control when he picked the ball up in the edge of the box was absolutely brilliant. And as you say, that wasn't the end of it. He had another three defenders all round about him, and just managed to flick the ball. He's got great movement, Roof. That's what I've noticed about him. He doesn't look the biggest of guys, Derek, but he's very, very strong and very, very quick. His body movement's excellent. And that was half the battle there. He used his upper body and swerved one way, swerved the other way, and with that momentum was able to take the ball with him. And then, an excellent strike past the goalkeeper as well. So poaching instincts as well as, some great trickery in the ball and just an outstanding goal.
Yep. 33rd minute, Aribo on the right into the box. He drags it more centrally, hits a powerful shot, blocked by Roof of all people, spills out. Arfield taps the rebound into the back of the net. However, it was correctly flagged for offside for Roof being offside initially. 33rd minute, there was a quick break up the park with Aberdeen playing a long ball right to Cosgrove. Balogun caught in two minds. Cosgrove passed to Hedges, who has a first-time shot, but it was blocked by Goldson. So again, Aberdeen showing the work. Yeah. A wee bit dangerous on the break.
Yes. There.
A bit disappointing from Balogun there, just that whole should he stick, should he twist kind of thing there. But fortunately, the rest of the defence covered up, and that's what we've seen this season so far from the defence. And we've seen it again last night with the Benfica game. If there's an individual that does make a mistake and gives the ball away, the rest of the defence are more than able to cover for it, which is what wasn't happening last year. If one player made the mistake, the other players weren't switched on enough, or they made their own mistakes to not cover for it, which is great to see this year.
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
And the last piece of play on the first half, on the 45th minute, there's a free kick from Aberdeen from 23 yards up and over the wall, a comfortable dive and save from McGregor. So very comfortable at half time, going in at 2-0, really and fully in control. Aberdeen still were, I wouldn't say posing danger, because the defence, you know, the defence had it covered all the time, but we had to be on the ball, and we had to be mindful that they could be dangerous on occasion.
Yep, definitely.
Into the second half, it didn't take us long to round out the game. It didn't take us long to close out the game, and that was on the 49th minute. We went 3-0 up with Arfield scoring. Lots of pressure in the build-up. Kent on the right side gets to the edge of the box, squares it to the middle, finds Arfield, who has a first-time shot, going goal-bound, but it takes a deflection off the defender, which outfoxes the keeper and into the back of the net. Again, take the shot.
Exactly, yep. It all comes from that, Derek. It was, as you say, the shot looked as if it was goal-bound regardless, but it did take a wicked deflection. But I really don't care, Derek. It's the momentum was with us. The shot was meant, ended up in the back of the net. So you're absolutely delighted right at the start of the second half as well. And that was the game, you know, put to bed, Derek, at that point. They were able to go out and, you know, see out the rest of the game. But they certainly, you know, kept the momentum up throughout the second half.
They certainly did. Because only 2 minutes later, those three words you love to hear, penalty to Rangers. On the 51st minute, there was a corner coming in. The defender had his hands all over Balogun and dragged him down. Clear penalty as well. You can't argue about that. And on the 52nd minute, up steps Tavernier to make it 4-0 on the 52nd minute. The keeper dives to his right and Tavernier sends it to the opposite side. So, great penalty again.
Yep.
So, game completely over at that point. It was quite correct. We should make some changes, because in the 55th minute, Jack off, Davis on. 65th minute, Morelos and Kent off, Defoe and Kamara on. Morelos had a bit of a strop coming off, didn't he? Throwing gloves down or something like that.
I don't mind that, Derek. It's, you know, the guy's obviously desperate to stay on, desperate to score. I think I would rather have that, a guy that is annoyed that he's no getting on the park. And again, I think there's a lot of people reading far too much into that, because it certainly didn't affect him in the game after that. So I'm quite happy that he's unhappy that he's getting taken off. It shows you that he has got some hunger and desire to play, Derek. So I'm not looking too much into that at all.
No. 73rd minute, Roof and Aribo off, Itten and Hadji on. 81st minute, Hadji with a shot just outside the box, and it was deflected wide from the corner. Resulting corner in at the near post, off the back of the defender, and was going into the top left, but a fantastic save from the keeper. Got onto the bar, and then he clattered, then onto the post, and he even clattered himself onto the post in the process as well. So it should have been 5-0 there, but great save from the keeper. 91st minute, the last piece of play of the game, Itten with a header just wide of the right post after a drive down the right and a great cross by Tavernier. So ultimately a fantastic result, and the steamroller that is Rangers keeps going on.
Certainly, and I mean, just even looking at the stats, Derek, 71% possession against Aberdeen, you know, just showed you that we had all the ball in the game, we did all the pressing. And as you said just a minute ago, just ruthless right from start to finish, which is, you know, absolutely brilliant to see. Another clean sheet and just another great performance. So, you know, I was absolutely delighted with that.
But wait, now I don't know who it was in the Aberdeen squad, but he came out and stated that for large parts of the game, Aberdeen were the better team.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. I've got the stats in front of me here, Derek. It certainly doesn't look like that. Certainly, when you look at possession, Rangers were by far, you know, ahead on everything, apart from shots off target, which Aberdeen beat us, but we beat them on everything else. So I don't know what game he was watching, Derek, but it was certainly, you know, a ruthless display by Rangers and, you know, a fantastic victory for us.
But it doesn't end there, because Derek McInnes kind of said similar as well and thought Aberdeen had a good performance and Rangers only scored with a penalty and three deflections.
Right, okay. Well, Derek can get it right up him. Do you know what I mean? As I say, I don't know what game he was sitting watching. You've went through a number of chances there, and that was you putting very brief highlights on the game, you know, for us out there. Rangers were in complete control the whole match. And as you say, apart from a couple of wee sort of half chances that Aberdeen had, they never deserved, you know, never really had a sniffy goal, you know, the whole game. So if that's Aberdeen being the better team, then I would really hate to see Aberdeen being, you know, the team that was the worst of the two teams, because they would be absolutely dreadful if that was the case.
I mean, football isn't for everyone, is it?
No, definitely not, no.
No. So, it leaves us into the next game, which was last night, or two nights when by the time you listen to this. It was Thursday the 26th of November at home to Benfica, where we drew 2-2 in the Europa League Group D Game 4. Dave, frustrating, wasn't it?
It was, Derek. I was really... Again, I do try to be the voice of reason, Derek, and try to use my extra years on you to try and sort of... look at things in perspective, but that was another fantastic opportunity that we had last night, wasn't it? To be 2-0 up against a team like that with, let's be honest, we not a lot left on the clock, to for it to happen again. And the thing that I text you when it happened was, you know, I thought lightning wasn't supposed to strike twice. And exactly the same thing happened, Derek. We've got a 2-goal cushion against them, and we just can't hang on to it, you know, against these teams. And I'm not going to turn around to say that it was a fluke or anything like that. Benfica are a quality team. And you're about to get into that, Derek. They were excellent. But we were matching them. And we were showing our qualities as well. And again, just annoyed, you know, and I'm sure you're about to get into it. You know, I think the game could have been managed so much better. I think we were all crying out for substitutions to be made at certain times. We looked as if we were getting tired and slowing down, and we had players on the bench that could have came on. I've seen a few on Twitter saying, oh, who did we have to, you know, to come on and stuff like that. There were guys there that could have made a difference, and I find it baffling. But I'll let you get into the game anyway, Derek, and then, as I say, it's still something to be happy about at the end of the day, but just frustrating that we didn't get the win.
Yeah, so we made two changes from the Aberdeen game, and we lined up McGregor, Tavernier, Goldson, Balogun, Barisic, Davis, Kamara, Arfield, Roof, Kent and Morelos. On the subs bench we had McLaughlin, Bassey, Hellander, Hadji, Itten, Barker, Stewart, Barjonas, Dixon and King. As I said on the post-match, is the significant stat here was it was the 82nd European appearance for McGregor, which makes him level with Barry Ferguson as our top European appearances for us. So
yep,
fantastic
excellent.
Stat there. He's quite clearly going to break that as well, which, you know, given the fact that he left in 2012 and he's still playing on, is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, as in you've only got to think, Derek, if, you know, things hadn't have worked out the way that they did in 2012 for us, you know, it would have been way, way, way past that. It would have been setting all sorts of records, you know, because undoubtedly we'd have been playing in Europe since then, but wasn't to be. But as you say, great that a keeper of his abilities back playing at the top level like that and playing in these huge matches and, you know, just excellent. And, you know, he will break it. He'll break it in the next game. So, well done.
Yep. So initially a bright start from both teams, with Benfica getting an early chance but put it wide. However, we went a goal up on the 6th minute with Arfield scoring. It was great play down the right, ending in Kent getting the ball past the defender, crosses in, knocked away to the left, picked up by Barisic well outside the box. We wanted him to shoot at that point because he had the opportunity to.
Yeah.
But he cuts it back. There was a great 1-2 with Morelos. Barisic with an inch-perfect cross into the middle from the left-hand side. Roof with an outstanding header, an equally outstanding save, only for it to be knocked to the back post for Tavernier to header it off the bar, bounces back out, and then Arfield with a volley from about 6 yards into the back of the net. Just a great goal, three bites of the cherry, but brilliant all round.
It seemed to take an eternity though, didn't it? It was like, oh my God, surely he's going to score. And then eventually, well put away, clinically put away there by Arfield as well on the volley. Tavernier should have buried that header at the back post. I don't care what anybody says. I know it was high up, but, you know, point blank range for it to come off the bar. And I thought, oh my God, but thankfully it just fell to the right, you know, the right spot, and Arfield was able to bury it into the net. So absolutely cloud nine at that point, Derek, because as you say, Benfica were looking good, you know, early on in the game. And, you know, I was hoping that was going to settle a few nerves, you know, for us to go 1-0 up and go for it after that, because I knew we were going to be in for a tough match, but absolutely brilliant start.
Yep. 12th minute, good forward play by Benfica, knocking the ball about well. A shot from the edge of the box and it went well wide. And then this is what's happening in the first half. The next highlight I've got here was in the 44th minute with Benfica on the left, cuts inside, great ball through to their attacker in the centre who has an outstanding first touch to play it into the box past Balogun. However, Balogun put in a great last-ditch tackle as the attacker was shooting and he put it out for the corner. So just great skill from Benfica there, but probably an even better tackle from Balogun.
Yeah, no, it was excellent, Derek. I thought Balogun in the first half was superb. Him and Glenn Kamara, I thought, were absolutely outstanding. As you say, there wasn't much happened in the first half. After that, it was a bit of a midfield tussle, which I felt we were, we were winning. We were certainly, having more control. I felt at that point we were stopping Benfica for getting near the box and stuff, and which is fantastic considering the players that they've got. But as I say, that was just an outstanding tackle there by Balogun when he made that, because he really had to be inch perfect with it, didn't he? Considering the position that the attacker was in, you know, for him to put it out, absolutely brilliant. I really like Balogun, Derek. I think he looks a quality player and he's fast as well. So, and we certainly needed that last night.
Yep. So, kind of the first half, as you said, it was a bit of a midfield tussle. I would disagree with you. I would have said Benfica probably had more of the possession. They were pressing high and pegging us back, and they had a high tempo and they had lots of the ball. Tavernier gave the ball away a couple of times in the first half that led to a couple of chances. However, our defence was solid and snuffed it out before McGregor was called into action. We were quite happy, I felt, to sit back and then hit on the break. Any time that we got up the park, though, we were completely crowded out. It looked as if they were sitting with like two banks of four in the back. They were getting back very quickly. And any time they got up the park, though, we were doing kind of similar. We were snuffing them out, maybe not in so many numbers, but just by sheer frustrating them in the positioning. We were knocking the ball about well, and we did hold possession when we needed to. I just felt Benfica probably had more of the ball in the first half. So certainly a decent first half, you can't argue with that. We frustrated them up front and, you know, looking for more of the same, because it was certainly a decent performance in the first half. 47th minute, a long throw into our box from the right-hand side, flicked on at the touchline and a volley from the on-running attacker, but went wide. 59th minute, a shot wide by Benfica after a lot of possession. And then more controversy as well, because on the 62nd minute, Roof was charging down the right-hand side with the ball. He got near to the box. He puts a cross in. The defender with his hands out in the box strikes them and spins back into possession of Benfica. An absolute definite handball there. A stonewaller. And again, it was at the near side, so I don't know what the linesman was looking at, but it certainly wasn't the ball.
Right in front of the linesman, Derek. You know, instantly I text you last night to say, surely that's a handball. As clear as day, there's loads and loads of people on social media. I've actually got the picture of the guy. His hands are up. The ball strikes his arm quite clearly in the box. You know, it was a definite penalty for us, and, you know, absolutely baffling. You could see Roof was going absolutely mental when the ball cannoned off the guy's arm. You know, he knew that it was a stonewaller as well. But as you say, I don't know what the linesman was thinking about. It was right in front of him and just baffling.
Yep. However, we never let it affect us too much because 6 minutes later, on the 68th minute, we went 2-0 up with an outstanding goal from Roof. A stunning goal and a stunning move. The ball was fed to Kamara on the left, who has a lovely back heel to Barisic. He takes the ball forward, feeds the ball to Roof, who takes the ball a couple of yards and then unleashes a stunning shot from the edge of the box past the keeper and into the net. Just an outstanding all-round goal, and then the execution at the end from Roof as well. Equally stunning.
Sensational, Derek. Absolutely sensational. As you say, the build-up play, Kamara on the left wing, the back heel into Barisic, who looks up, sees Roof, you know, at the left-hand side, just outside the box. He's got the confidence to take on the defender. The defender actually shows him inside, you know, infield. That's where he goes. He looked up very, very quickly, saw where the keeper was and just unleashed an absolute thunderbolt right in the top corner. Absolute peach of a goal. Sensational stuff. And a goal worthy winning a game, Derek, which it should have been. It should have been the goal that won the game. Just absolutely sensational. We're getting used to Roof doing that now, especially in Europe. That, you know, not quite as sensational as his last one, but I tell you something, Derek, absolutely brilliant. Really, really top goal.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's just all about the build-up as well. We've scored so many goals this year, especially in Europe, where the build-up right from our half all the way up there till we actually score has just been outstanding. Yeah. It's been one-touch stuff. It's been incredible.
It was just, as I say, great play and awareness by, you know, all the players all around. And for Rufy, he's obviously, his confidence is sky high. They're now, Derek, to take that on and, you know, just a tremendous goal. Really was.
Yeah. However, all our work started to be unravelled on the 77th minute when Benfica pulled a goal back to make it 2-1. And it was an OG from Tavernier. It was a long ball into the far side of the box from the right, played to the unmarked attacker in the centre who has a shot. It was saved by McGregor. It rebounded out, hits off Tavernier, who knew nothing about it, and into the back of the net. Unlucky from Tavernier. He wasn't playing his best tonight, absolutely. He was working hard, he was trying, but there was a lot that just wasn't coming up off for him. He made a few mistakes. This one, certainly, you can't blame him at all for. He was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah, could do nothing about it. But I think that what was more annoying is the defending prior to that, because they had several opportunities to get the ball, snuff it out, and they just backed off and backed off. They just failed to put a tackle in, and they allowed them to sneak in there. And considering their play in the final third was lacking, they just seemed to switch it on, and this is what they got from it, a goal.
Yeah, no, it was disappointing, Derek, especially at that point in the game, because it hadn't even been 10 minutes since we had scored our second goal. And again, we'll get into game management, Derek. I felt so strongly when we scored that second goal for us to bring on somebody else in midfield, just basically try and stop Benfica playing, frustrate them, you know, just do anything to cling on to that two-goal lead, and it didn't happen. And then for them to score a goal, to get back into the game, still with, you know, a good sort of 12, 13 minutes left on the clock, you know, was just inviting them on. It gave them that hope, didn't it? It gave them that glimmer, that chance. And just really disappointing, wasn't it?
Yep, absolutely. 79th minute, Morelos with a powerful shot on the edge of the box. The keeper palms it up and then ends up hitting off the top of the bar, back out into play, but Roof just couldn't quite get the ball and it's eventually cleared. Unlucky that there.
Yep.
And perhaps if that had went in, then the next thing wouldn't have happened, because on the 81st minute, Groundhog Day, Benfica drew level and made it 2-2. The ball from the right played into the centre. Simple play to the unmarked attacker in the middle of the box, who blasted it high into the net. A common theme with both goals: unmarked player, unmarked attacker in the centre of the box, who effectively the ball was worked right through without them even putting a tackle in. Powder puff defence from a defence that was absolutely fantastic all night.
It was a collapse of concentration, Derek, which is really... it's just not like our defence this season at all, is it? We've seen it in the two games against Benfica. That was sort of a wee switch off, and as you quite rightly said, the one player that we just leave unmarked. And it was, you know, it was a good finish by him, but the ball should never have reached him in the first place. We should have had somebody right there to snuff that out. It didn't happen. they scored, and you know, we were going from sheer rejoice to thinking, oh shit, we're going to leave here and not get anything out of this game at all, because there was still plenty of time for Benfica to get the winner as well. And I think that's what you suddenly go from, you know, thinking that you're going to win this game to saying to yourself, shit, we're going to get beat here. And I had a horrible feeling at that point, Derek, that we were going to lose it completely.
Yep, absolutely. And considering the other game, the way it was going, but fortunately, Standard Liège got a last-minute goal and they won their game.
Yeah.
However, I want to preface what I'm about to say next with, when you look at the game, we're playing ultimately what is a Champions League team.
Yes, I know.
And the quality of their team, they spent 100 million in the summer. Their team is worth like nearly 200 million, et cetera, et cetera. And the team have been fantastic. And if you had said to us, would you take 2 points from Benfica at the start of these two games, you would have bit your hand off for it, considering that they were the favourites to, or they were the favourites to qualify. They were seeded one ultimately. However, it's not the result that I'm annoyed at. It's the manner of the collapse both times. And I know we're playing a quality side. However, had it been a 0-0 or a 1-1 or a 2-2 each, and we had been, like, can I say, 1-0, 1-each, 2-1, 2-2-each or something like that, then I would have fully accepted it. But it was the game management in both games that have effectively let us down. The first game, it was the players, I felt, for not just taking the ball to the corner. They were still going for the juggler, which was good to see, but they didn't need to do it. This game, it was the lack of subs. And Benfica had made 4 subs throughout the game, and their second set of subs was another 2 players coming on just before we scored their second. Throughout the game, we made no subs whatsoever. Now, people were saying online, but you don't want to, you know, when we're 2-0 up or 2-1, you don't want to bring on subs because it might upset the balance and it might risk the game. Well, you never made subs, and it did cost us the game, effectively. At the same time, you look at the bench, people are saying, look at the bench, well, who do you bring on? If you bring on Hellander, you need to change the system. If you bring, you're not going to bring on, you know, attacking player. It really doesn't matter. At this stage, surely it's about fresh legs. They had 4 players with fresh legs. Our players had put an absolute shift in. They had worked their arses off. They were dead on their feet, some of them, it looked like. And that's what cost us the 2 goals, I think.
It was. I mean, we did have players that we could have brought on, Derek. I mean, I know we had the, you know, Barjonas and Dixon, King on the bench. We still had guys like Brandon Barker that could have came on, because I thought after he scored the goal, Kamar Roof, his legs were looking heavy. We could have changed things up there. You know, we still had Hadji that could have came on and played in midfield also. So, I mean, we had two players that could have came on. We could have freshened things up front, you know, by taking, you know, Morelos off and bringing on it, and just to give us something different. So we did have some options in the bench. And like you, I know it's hard. We hate to criticise the management team just now because of the position we're in, Derek. But as I say, we wouldn't be football fans if we didn't. And it's just, I think we're just frustrated by the fact that we were winning by 2 goals, you know, and we let it crumble again. And everybody seemed to be saying at that point, why are we not making subs? Why are we not running the clock down? Why are we not, you know, just even for things like that, just to freshen some things up. And it was baffling me as well, because you could tell that Benfica were getting on top, and we were to tell that our players had put in everything that they could into the game, you know, when they were getting tired. And, you know, so they're not that we're at the stage that, you know, we can't criticise them. Of course we can. Like I said, we are fans. We want to see our team do well. And again, I think just disappointment, Derek. But as a lot of people have pointed out, Derek, for us to be disappointed at drawing 2-2 with Benfica at home, thinking that we should have won it, shows you how far that we've came in a relatively short period of time. But again, it's one of these things. Hopefully they will learn from it, because we, I've got no doubt, will play better teams than Benfica, are almost at their standard again in this competition, and I hope that we can learn from it. And it's just a pity that there was certain players that were injured that could have came on and made a huge difference for us. But I did think that we had players there he could have brought on.
I mean, this is the thing, it's the nature of Rangers fans. You're not allowed to criticise sometimes when there is criticism to be levelled out. As I said, don't want to take that away from the team, because it was a great performance. It was a well-deserved point. It should have been 3, but it was a well-deserved point. And ultimately, we are in an absolutely fantastic position where we are just now. We only need a point from our next 6 points, which you know, we've beat the two teams and we're playing one home, one away. So you would like to think we're going to do it. However, I think it's more the case of being in that position and throwing it away. It's a case of what could have been.
Yeah.
And we've thrown it away. It's more the case of what happens if that's in the last 16, or what happens if that's in the last 32, and we don't get another chance to rectify it because it's not a league situation, it's a knockout situation, and we throw it away like that. That is what I'm on about. What happens if that was, you know, say that was, well, we're 2-0 up, we're drawing the first leg 0-0, a good away draw, and then we let in two goals like that and they go through and away goals. That's the kind of thing. And it's more frustrating because I know we're far punching above our weight in that game and this season so far. But I know the team can do it. And that's the difference. It's different, the fact that if the team were lucky about it, the team are not lucky. They've got it well within their grasp to do something this year. I'm not saying win the Europa League. I'm not saying even get to the final. But I think the way we've played, the way we've been solid, we've shown that we can do it, but we've also showed again that we can have lapses like this. So it's more frustrating because I know the team are so good.
Yeah. Again, though, as I say, just to get on to my last point, Derek, I'm hoping that this is a learning curve as well, you know, for the management team to say, right, okay, we've been in this position before. We need to tighten things up here. Don't go too gung-ho. Let's just try and frustrate the other team. Run the clock down. That's my only hope, you know, with that situation, is it is a learning curve, Derek. But as I say, there's nothing we can do about it now. We've spoken about it. It's, you know, I'm in complete agreement. You know, the management team are not above criticism. We are fans, you know, we're entitled to have our say. And I'm sure the vast majority of Rangers fans out there are, you know, are the same. Looking at it on paper, two fantastic results against a top European team. But again, we could have had a lot more, Derek.
And we could have been a lot worse. We could be Celtic fans right now.
I was going to lower the tone, Derek, but there you go. Let you do it. But yeah, wait and see. If there was one team that I'd be desperate to play, you know, the new Derek, it would be them, because we're so far ahead at this moment in time. It's great. But again, I'm not getting too carried away. We need to concentrate on ourselves. As I said before, we need to keep this momentum up, especially in the league. Go out and destroy teams like we've been doing. We need to keep that going. I, you know, firmly believe, you know, that we've got the squad to do it. We've got quality players in reserve, which we've never had in a very, very long time. So I'm in confident, you know, in a confident mood now, and I just hope that they keep going the way they're going.
Yep. So in the league, we've played 15, won 13, drawn 2, lost 0, scored 41, conceded still only 3, goal difference plus 38, and we've got 41 points. We're 11 ahead of Celtic, who've got 2 games in hand, but we've got a 17 better goal difference than them, which is incredible at this point.
Totally.
In the Europa League, we have played 4, 1-2, drawn 2, lost 0, and we've got 8 points. Benfica have also got 8 points, and Poznan and Liège are on 3 points. So we're technically top of the league just now, because our head-to-head is better on Benfica. I thought it went on results, but then obviously because we've both drawn the games, it goes down to away goals.
Yep.
And then, so obviously, it just leaves us needing a point from our next 2 games, which, as I said, you would like to think we're going to do. I
certainly hope so, yes.
So the next game is on Sunday, the 29th of November. It's away to Falkirk in the League Cup last 16, or round 2, or whatever it's called. That's a really pish time. That's 5 o'clock p.m. kickoff.
Yeah, strange one,
Interestingly, and the conspiracy theorists of the Orcs are going to be raging at this one, because the fact that Falkirk have announced that they've got 2 players tested positive for COVID. No other close contact, so it's just them 2 at this present moment. But, you know, it is a bit strange that all these teams that were about to come up against get positive COVID tests, Davey.
I'm saying that. I'm not tempting fate here, Derek. Definitely not. But, no, I did see that. Yes, they'll be down the road for me, not far away at all. As I say, I'm just annoyed that, you know, we can't get into the stadium, because it would have been one that I'd have definitely been going to. I would have been able to get a ticket for that game with the contacts that I've got. So I'm just annoyed that, you know, I can't go down in person to see the game. Again, it's going to be on that bloody plastic pitch that I don't like our players playing on. But it's got to be done, but I would like to think that we can easily beat a team for the lower leagues with some ease, and I think the manager will be making quite a few changes in that game, Derek.
Yeah, I mean, the last time we played Falkirk, I think it was anyway, that I was in Stuttgart on a stag do, and I think we were 2-0 up and we lost, ended up coming back to draw 2 each or lose 3-2 or something, so wasn't best pleased that night, but I'm sure it'll be different this time.
Yes, I'm sure it will be, Derek.
Next game after that is Thursday the 3rd of December. It was at home. It's going to be at home to Standard Liège. That's game 5 of the Europa League. That's an 8 o'clock kickoff, so hopefully all we need is a draw. That's, you know, if we play for a draw, I'll be fairly happy about that. Sunday the 6th of December, away to Ross County in the Premiership. That's a midday kickoff. And then the last Europa League game, which is Thursday the 10th of December, away to Poznan, and that's game 6, and that's a 17:55 kickoff. So all to play for. Quick run
definitely
of games.
Yes.
Steve and I will be back at some point for one of the games anyway.
Definitely, yes.
Yes. So it's now time for the classic match.
And there it is! The final whistle's gone. Rangers have won the European Cup Winners' Cup.
So, Dave, do you want to explain what happened here?
Right. Derek, as you know, ever since I subscribed to Rangers TV, as anyone who, you know, gets onto RTV knows that there's a catalogue of classic matches to choose from, and I sat on Wednesday in front of my computer and I was sitting looking through all the games, and there was a lot of games. I was looking at games way back in 1985, and what I do is I sit and I go through, and you know, I'll watch you know the games, I'll go back and I'll see what the scores were, and I think to myself there, and then I stumbled across one from 1997. So I have got, Derek, as you know, a large list of games that I have covered over the years, and it is a large list because I sent it to you tonight when you pointed out how much an utter plonker I had been. And this game wasn't on the list, so I thought, right, that's absolutely perfect. And I wrote up the match report, and I honestly can't remember watching the game back at all. I wrote up the match report. I had to go into various old newspaper articles to find, you know, the actual full teams for Rangers and Hibernian. I sent the match link to Derek, telling him what game that we were covering. He said, right, that's fine. And then just about an hour before we were due to record, Derek tells me that we've already covered this game, and it was only about 2 months ago that we actually covered it. I honestly can't remember covering it at all. Can't remember watching it, looking at it, anything like that whatsoever. I've got the match report in front of me here right now, and I can only apologise.
Accepted, Dave. Grudgingly accepted.
So, as Derek said, we have done, I've done a hell of a lot of classic matches. So, Derek is going to pick one from right back when we first started recording that we've not heard of in quite a while. So, I hope you enjoy it, folks. And I will make sure my list is up to date. That game is now added. And I'll definitely come away because there are loads of games to choose from on RTV. So why that one particular game has came back to my attention, I've got no idea. But there will be a brand new classic match in the next podcast, I promise.
No, it was an honest mistake, Dave.
It was an honest mistake. And as I say, I was baffled when you got back to me because the first thing I did was look at the list of games that I've covered. I actually sent the list to you to show you, and it wasn't on it. And then you pointed out the actual podcast episode that I'd covered it, and it turns out that it was only about 2 months ago I'd covered it, which is even more baffling. But there you go. So, again, there will be a new classic match in the next podcast.
Yes, so without further ado, we're going to do a classic match now, and we're going way back to season 1, episode 2, and it's the goal difference title where we beat Dunfermline 6-1 to wrap up the title on the final day of the season, and Chris Sutton had a meltdown.
Absolute
at the end
meltdown.
Of the
room. Yes. And we're still fondly reminding him of that every single chance that we get.
Yes.
Right, the classic match that we're going to bring for you. Last week, of course, we did the historic Helicopter Sunday, which all Rangers fans can remember. The game that I'm going to cover is basically exactly 2 years before that happened, the 25th of May 2003, and it was, again, it was the last game of the season. It was, I think, a week after Celtic had been in Seville and had been beaten in the UEFA Cup final. We were both going into the final day, final match on level points. I think we had a one-goal lead from Celtic at that point, if I can remember correctly. And basically, we had to win a beat Dunfermline and hope that our score was higher than what Celtic's was away at Kilmarnock. Now, I've got the team that we played at that game, and there's some class players here when you look back at some of the players that we had. The lineup for Rangers that day was Stefan Kloss in goal, Fernando Rixon at right back, Arthur Newman at left back. We had a defensive pairing of Craig Moore and Lorenzo Amoruso. In the centre of the midfield, we had Barry Ferguson and Mikel Arteta. And then playing on one side, we had Claudio Caniggia. On the other side, Shota Avaladze. And then Ronald De Boer playing just behind Michael Molls up front. So I think you can agree that's a class starting 11 that we, you know, we had back then.
But the only thing that really matters was Claudio Caniggia's hair.
I know, quality. It was that sort of matted, long, had they been washed in, you know, 2 years look that he had, just sort of stuck in the one place for being so long. So, what happened during the game? Like I said, we had to win that game. We had to win it well, because we had a feeling that Celtic would be all guns blazing trying to win their game at Kilmarnock. So, we started off, we had a fantastic start to the game where Michael Molls got the ball at the edge of the box, moved one way, slotted it underneath the Dunfermline goalkeeper to make it 1-0 to Rangers. That was only in 2 minutes. It was a perfect start. I was there that game. I thought to myself, fantastic, we're on our way, let's try and get another one as quickly as possible. But then what happened? Dunfermline equaliser just a couple of minutes after that. Luckily, because it was at the start of the game, all the fans were still well up for it, and we only had to wait about another 10 minutes before we got their second goal. Claudio Caniggia scored that on the 16th minute to make it 2-1 to Rangers. And then just before half-time, Shota Avaladze, Dancing Queen, came in, made it 3-1 to Rangers. Don't know if you can remember that, Avaladze's dancing, it was a bit mental. He came in to make it 3-1 to Rangers at half-time. Then into the second half, Dunfermline were putting Rangers under the cosh a wee bit, and there was an absolutely incredible save by Stefan Kloss. A shot was hit, I'm not going to guess who the Dunfermline player was, but a shot was hit, it was going right into the top corner like an absolute rocket. I don't know how Kloss managed to get his hand behind it, but it pulled off an incredible save, turned it round the post to keep it at 3-1. Then Ronald De Boer, who I wouldn't have said was an out-and-out striker, I would have put him as a sort of support player at the front, stole in with a header to make it 4-1 to Rangers, and that was his 20th goal of the season playing in that position. So I don't know about you, Derek, Ronald De Boer is one of my favourite players of all time at Rangers. I thought he was an absolute class act. When it came to Rangers, we were told, oh, it's the wrong De Boer, you've got Frank De Boer, the man that you should have got in defence. But I thought Ronald De Boer was a class act. What was your memories of De Boer?
Absolutely, you know, one of the world's greatest players for me, both him and his brother. But having Ronald in the team was absolutely stunning, and the fact that he scored 20 goals from that position as well,
unbelievable,
absolutely fantastic.
Yep. So after that, that made it 4-1 to Rangers. We were well on our way. We were checking the scores back at Celtic. It was still kind of neck and neck. Then Stephen Thompson, who came on for Michael Molls, got in, stolen at the back post. And that was actually Rangers' 100th league goal that season that he had scored. And that was to make it 5-1 to Rangers. So I think that we scored 100 league goals. But when you look at the way that McLeish set the team out, you know, two wide men, two strikers, two, you know, an attacking midfielder. But Barry Ferguson was always that sort of anchor man, which I think was his best position. But it was a very attacking team. It was a class act, a team that season. But Thompson scored the 100th league goal. Then Neil McCann came on for Claudio Caniggia, ran through into the box. He was brought down right at the end of the match. And Mikel Arteta with the penalty, and it's another one of these iconic moments that you look back when you look at Arteta when he scored. He was still really young, Arteta. He was a class act. He stepped up, cool as you like, slotted the ball. all away, and then he ran away and done his mad dance with his hands in the air and all that. For, you know, it's something that you always see, you know, when you're talking about Arteta and his time at Rangers, you always remember his sort of mad celebration at the end.
The championship winning goal, if Mikel Arteta can hold his nerve. He can! Rangers 6, Dunfermline 1, and the championship appears to be Rangers.
That made it 6-1 to Rangers. It put us, you know, one goal in front of Celtic. It finished 97 points we finished on that season and 101 league goals scored, which is absolutely phenomenal. Now, to think that we only had one extra goal, you know, in the goal difference against Celtic, it shows you how incredibly tight the league were and how, you know, there's hardly any drop points in those matches. So that was high pressure stuff there for those guys, but it was a class act team. It was a great game to be at. Everybody was going wild. It was great, the fact that it was, you know, we hadn't won the league the season before that, so it was fantastic and just a class first 11 there for Rangers. And with the likes of Neil McCann still there, you know, to come on, it proved to be a great player for us as well. A great game, a great memory. I just hope that all the Rangers fans that they're listening to this will remember that game fondly as well. Maybe not quite as dramatic as Helicopter Sunday with everything that happened, but again, still, it was a dramatic day and just great to be there. Can you, did you have much recollection of that game, Derek? I know you're quite a bit younger than me.
Yeah, I was watching it at home with my dad, and I just remember the both games kicked off obviously at the same time, and they were both on separate channels, TV channels, like it was for Helicopter Sunday a few years later. I just remember that each channel, obviously, you know, was any update of a goal was kind of bringing up a wee box in the corner showing you that, and it was back and forward all game. 1 minute Celtic were going to win the league, the next minute Rangers, back to Celtic, then Rangers. It was an incredible experience just to witness what was unfolding. Great drama for the neutral as well. Turning point, I think, was Alan Thompson in the Celtic game. He missed a penalty, which would have put Celtic over the threshold to win the league, and he missed it. Obviously, our game finished a couple of minutes before Celtic, and then when you know, we had finished, we won, we celebrated, and then we had to wait on the kind of Celtic result coming through, and the camera shot was just McLeish looking at the kind of one of the guys in the sideline. I think it was one of the stewards, and he told them that Celtic game had finished, and the whole place erupted. So it was a fantastic occasion. Great to the fact that it was at Ibrox as well. Apparently there was a banner up there, and I never realised that until just now. Apparently that was the world record for the 50th title.
That's right, yeah. Well, that's correct, yeah.
I mean, McLeish, much maligned manager, I thought.
He was, actually. When you look back now and you actually see what he did achieve in the short time that he was there.
I mean, he won more trophies than Celtic's best manager since Jock Stein, which was obviously Martin O'Neill.
Yeah.
And you know, I always you know, liked McLeish. I was always one of his supporters. A couple of my friends, you know, never really taken to him. But what he had to deal with at the time, obviously not as harsh a circumstances as McCoist and even Walter Smith had. But I mean, that was the kind of start of the problems with not being able to sign people and signing really kind of very standard players, but we were absolutely fantastic, and I loved that.
Let's not forget as well, we're not talking about the European Cup, we're talking about the Champions League in its current form. He was the first manager to take a Scottish club past the group stages of the Champions League as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as I say, he didn't have a great squad of players to choose from because we did have to sell a lot of players. But, you know, in the short space of time McLeish was there, he was very successful. I think maybe the fact that we had been so spoilt in the past with the amount of players and trophies and things that we'd won was maybe the reason that there was a lot of fans that weren't that keen on him and things like that. But obviously, when we sit and look back now, he was a very successful manager at Rangers.
Yeah, as well as, and obviously he went on to manage Birmingham, and I know he kind of left there, but he had, you know, won the, was it the League Cup he won with Birmingham?
They won the League Cup and got relegated in the same season. But at the same time, he done a very good job as the Scotland national coach as well.
Yeah.
After Walter Smith, so he was a very successful manager for us. But when you look back at that team that he had, though, a lot of the players that had remained for the Dick Advocaat era, he did have a class at team, but he got them playing well, and he got them playing, you know, very attacking football, and it was great, you know, to sit back and watch at times. So he's hoping that we get back to that stage very soon, eh?
Absolutely. One other thing about the game is obviously the one sour comment that came out of it was from Chris Sutton. Obviously, he had never known anything about, you know, our game, what went on, because he was playing his own game there, and he made comments that Dunfermline basically laid down to us, which he was quite rightly absolutely lambasted in the press for. Unnecessary comments from him.
I think the fact that Dunfermline had equalised at one point against us kind of proved that Dunfermline were up for it, but as I say, you can't take that result away for that starting 11. I mean, that is a class act 11, and if there was players of that ability still playing, you know, for a club in Scotland at the moment, they would be beating every team that scoreline. Seeing, you know, the current state of Scottish football at the moment, these players would be absolute superstars playing in that league just now. So I'm taking nothing away from the performance that day. I was there, I've seen how hungry the players were and how much they wanted it and how well they played. So his comments were unfounded for me completely. As I say, just very disappointed with everything that had happened with him over the last week, but he had nothing to merit what he did say at the time.
No, totally not.
So, a great match there, as ever, you know, great memories. You know, it's one of the matches that will go down in folklore, will live within my memory for forever, basically, and most Rangers fans as well. I mean, you thought that was exciting, and then Helicopter Sunday came, but that was the original one, which was an incredible day, wasn't it?
Yeah, it certainly was, Derek. Absolutely brilliant. And as you say, for the fact that the way that it all panned out again, was just fantastic, and it was always remember guys like Mikel Arteta on that day, you know, scoring the penalty, you know, that really did clinch it for us at the end. So, you know, absolutely brilliant, and you know, great to go back. Even if I have covered it twice, but it was you know, a great game to go back and watch, and some fantastic players.
So we'll go into the news. So obviously the first thing we've got to cover is the sad news that football icon, legend, one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest, Diego Maradona passed away age 60. Just sad news all round. Living the life he did, though, it's quite surprising that he lasted to 60, but a sad, sad loss for the world of football.
It's quite sad, Derek, when a lot of people have been sort of half expecting it, as you say, with the extravagant lifestyle that he did lead. I actually was quite surprised when I found out that he was only 60, Derek, to be honest with you. But what a phenomenal player. If you get the chance to watch the documentary that was made about him, I've watched it twice now. It's absolutely sensational. There's a lot of, you know, it's all fully unseen footage of, you know, when he signed for Napoli and what he did for Napoli. And he basically, I mean, he single-handedly, in my opinion, won the World Cup for Argentina, Derek, in 1986. He was tremendous, because the rest of the Argentina team weren't that great, and he was just a superstar. He really was. And, you know, I didn't witness Pele playing, so he's certainly the greatest player I've ever seen play football. And, you know, a sad loss, you know, to football. And apparently, when you hear people speaking about him, one-to-one, he was supposed to be genuinely, you know, a genuinely nice guy, you know, very friendly. I think the persona of sort of Maradona, you know, sort of took over, and, you know, the wild lifestyle and the things that he would partake in, and crazy behaviour and stuff like that, alter ego a lot of the time, but very sad. And but again, if anybody gets the chance, if you've not seen the documentary about Maradona, it's absolutely sensational. You really need to go and watch it.
Yeah, I've watched it as well. It's fantastic. Just I was too young to really see it, to see him play. I'd only remember him vaguely from the 1994 World Cup. Watching it, my overriding thought is, what would his life and his career been like if he hadn't joined Napoli and got involved in the dodgy characters that he did, and kind of egging him on and really, I think you've seen some of the footage there, and he looked quite uneasy with the situations he had got himself into, and he was obviously getting influenced by certain powerful figures in the kind of underworld as well, by the look of it. So if he had maybe chose another club or another country to go to, you never know, you know, if he had would have taken that same path that he did. But a sad loss for football all the same.
Yeah, definitely was, yeah.
So into Rangers news here, as the finances were released, which cover up until the end of June 2020, and the headlines don't make for good reading, do they? But
no.
£15.9 million loss, which is up by £4.3 million in the previous year. Revenue has increased, though, to £59 million. It's ultimately, the losses are not sustainable. However, Douglas Park and John Bennett have agreed to provide immediate loans to cover the shortfall. The goodwill from them will eventually run out, though, and that's the big fear, obviously. We're very fortunate just now. We have effectively no debt because it's going to get covered by converting loans to shares, which they've already done so far from the loans they've given us. The main thing is, though, that everything seems to be, apart from the headline figure there, is going in the right direction. The revenue's up, however. You look at the headline figure and it looks horrific, which, yeah, to be honest, it is. However, you've got to look behind that. And even from a very basic and ultimately no knowledge of finances, you dig a wee bit deeper into it and you look at it and you say the revenue's up, which is always a good thing. It doesn't include the Castore money or any of the retail money. I also believe there's £3 million in that set aside for Sports Direct, which might not even be that much. I think we're still due money from the old retail deal as well. The appeal decision on the Sports Direct deal is still to be heard. I think that'll be getting heard in the early new year. We've obviously, in that period, had a shortened season. We haven't sold any assets like players. We've majorly upgraded and refurbed parts of the stadium. Obviously, we've got the Edmundston House thing going on as well. And if you look at it, if we had accepted the Lille bid of £16 million for Morelos, then we would have broke even.
Yes.
So we will become a selling club, and I wouldn't be surprised if Morelos goes in January. You can usually command a slightly bigger price in January as well, given that it's just an awkward time of the season. And when you look at it, yeah, he's been scoring in Europe, but our goals in the league have come from everyone but him. So we've adapted our squad, we've adapted our team now. Granted, he's doing a lot more off the ball now. He's dragging players out, he's coming back, he's been great doing that way. He's just not getting the goals. It just shows you, though, Champions League qualification is 100% imperative. We qualify for Europe once, that ultimately wipes out our loss and then doubles it in terms of profit. So it's imperative we get to the Champions League, and given the level and the qualification, I don't think, given who we're playing just now in Europe, it's going to be too far out of our reach.
No, it's a favourable draw, you know, to get in. It helps us out massively. It doesn't look great, just like what you've said, Derek, but there are a lot of things to add in there. We have spent a lot of money on the squad as well, let's be honest. Bringing players in, you know, that have commanded quite a big transfer fee. So bringing in these guys as well. Morelos didn't go, but like you, I've got a feeling he will be away in January. I don't know who it will be to, if Lille will come back in for another bid or not. There's a lot of talk that apparently they are still interested in him. I don't know. But we do still have the retail deal to come in. We do still have a full season to go. And you know, the season was sort of extraordinary last year with it being cut short. And I don't know any club out there, Derek, who's not posting a loss. Let's be honest. Every team out there is struggling. I just think because it's us and, you know, because of what's happened to us in the past few years, these things are brought out in the press more. But I think you could go to nearly any club and, you know, the world, and I don't think there'll be anybody out there that have made a huge profit going on the last year. So I'm not too worried, Derek, but as you say, we can't keep relying on these guys to come in and bail us out. We have to get on a sort of even keel, don't we? And if it's going to be selling the likes of Morelos to do that, quite rightly, as you said, we have got a big enough squad now to keep going and, you know, keep scoring goals and keep winning. I will be sorry to see him go, but it does look likely that he would be one of the players that they would cash in on, doesn't it?
Quite possibly. I mean, we've got a number of major assets now. I think the last time the analyst done any sort of work on the value of the squad, it was over £100 million, which, you know, is incredible. So, yeah, I think what you've got to remember as well is a lot of our income is at the start of the season, obviously, with season tickets. With 48,000 season tickets, you know, we have got a large chunk of the money we would be getting for ticket sales in already, haven't we?
Yep.
You know, there's only another, what, 2,000-3,000 tickets that would go on general sale anyway. So when you look at it that way, we wouldn't be losing as much as some clubs will be. Absolutely not, because a lot of them just rely on just general footfall and pay at the gate. We'll obviously be losing stuff in the kind of programmes and match day stuff and match day tat that you buy as well, and pies at half time. I don't know how much of that goes to the club, mind you, if they're leased out to companies, but it's certainly, you know, clubs need to get back to having fans, even if it's a limited capacity just now. I know there's talks with the Scottish government, because the England fans in England are going to be getting into the stadium, but in typical Scottish government SNP fashion, they hate football, and they have said categorically no, because we can't have certain have some industries coming in and some industries not. Doesn't make sense, that, because as soon as lockdown's lifted, they're you know, going to open up restaurants, they're going to open up pubs and things like that. So it's a bit double standards there. But anyway, on the back of the finances, the AGM has been announced for midday on Tuesday, the 15th of December. So it'll be interesting, that one there. Yeah, obviously, you know, lockdown should have just been lifted by then. So, well, hopefully that's the plan anyway, depending on what the government decide to do. But I don't know if fans will be able to attend or not with that one.
I doubt it, Derek. I've got a feeling it'll be sort of broadcast out, and you know, they might try and do it. You know, the questions being asked will be beamed live in and stuff like that. We'll be able to sort of log in and watch it possibly on RTV or something like that. I've got a feeling that there'll no be, or if there is, there'll be a very, very small amount of people allowed in.
Yeah. We mentioned it before, Edmundston House has fully been demolished now and plans for the new building have been approved.
Yeah.
A few minor alterations. I think it was just about the positioning of some things, and I think part of the roof at one point was changed. I think it was like a chimney stack or something like that. But I can't wait for this to open. It's something that's been desperately needed for a long time. We've spoken about it before, but it's going to be a massive money spinner for us.
Absolute massive, Derek. It's going to be something, you know, spectacular for the fans as well. The whole match day experience is going to change, you know, big time. We're basically going to have this new arena as what it's going to be, right next to the stadium, state of the art. It's going to completely change the whole outlook of the whole area. It's absolutely brilliant. It's been needed, and you know, a huge congratulations to the club for getting that through, because it is going to be spectacular. I can't wait, you know, for it all to be there and for us all to get in and have a look. It's going to be tremendous.
I don't think it's going to be big enough, to be honest, Dave. I really don't. But some of the objections for it was absolutely hilarious, though. I mean, people were complaining about the noise it's going to bring, and then there was a meeting that was broadcast, and I think it was like a Zoom meeting of councillors and a representative from Rangers, and the councillor was adamant that it was a 24-hour licence, but it turns out he was put in his place because he was looking at the initial draft of the application and not the revised one. I think there's been about two or three drafts of it, and he wasn't looking at it, so he had to apologise for his behaviour there.
That's good. Yep. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yep.
Next thing here, obviously, the idiots that are Jordan Jones and Jordan Edmondson, they were given 7-game bans by the SFA for their COVID breach.
Yeah.
I think it's a fair punishment given the seriousness of it and given the situation. However, I can't help but feel once again we've been treated differently compared to others committing the same offence. As you remember, Ballingolly and the Aberdeen 8 got 7 games with about 3 or 4 suspended. Granted, after those bans were handed out, the SFA were clamping down harder, so the proof will be in the pudding when someone again breaches COVID regulations. The ban is academic, largely because it's unlikely that they'll see the first team again. However, They've both apologised and they both accept their bans, as do the club. And they were back in training in the first team. You think about it, we've been very lucky with COVID so far. So if we were to have an outbreak, we may have to rely on them.
Yes.
So it may be best to keep them on side until it passes the now, and then, you know, get rid if that's what they're deemed to be doing. But certainly Rangers and Gerrard seem to want to draw a line under it just now.
Okay. We spoke about it in length in the last pod, Derek, so I'll not go over it again. I was very surprised, you know, as you say, to see them back training with the first team. What you've just said is, you know, very sensible. It's head over heart when it comes to these guys. I was bitterly, bitterly disappointed and really didn't want anything to do with them again. But as you say, try to be sensible. Things could happen where we do need them to come into the squad and stuff like that. So maybe that is how the manager is looking at it as well, trying to be sensible rather than anything else. So we'll just have to see what happens with that one, eh?
Yep. Hey, here's the ironic thing about the whole thing. Three Scotland under 21 players tested positive for COVID after their recent exploits in the European stage. Another eight having to self-isolate. Kind of ironic given the fact that the SFA are hammering and investigating clubs for any positive tests just now. Completely reeks of double standards, but you don't expect anything else from the inept SFA, do you?
You definitely don't, no.
No. One thing I want to touch on here is the Duff and Phelps two have had an out-of-court settlement for six figures for their malicious prosecution. This is in relation to the case they were taking against Police Scotland. Charles Green is also due damages, as it is admitted that the prosecution of Mr. Green had no proper basis. Several odd things. I don't want to say too much about it because there is ongoing things, but there's several odd things about the whole thing. None of these three, Green and the Duff and Phelps two, were actually technically prosecuted. Yes, they were arrested and charged. Then they had their charges dropped prior to the trial. So none of them were actually prosecuted. In the course of an investigation, you can be arrested and or detained and questioned. So I fail to see what the issue is. I mean, they're obviously going on reputational damage.
Yes, so that's exactly what I was about to say. That's what they're going on here.
However, one of the things, and I do know the source of this, it came from a Celtic blogger, so take of it what you will, but it kind of makes a lot of sense, and from what I've looked into, there certainly seems to be a wee bit of truth in it. It's claimed that the documents that were obtained, which proved the wrongdoing, were obtained and are handled in an inadmissible way, so that's why it was ruled out in court, which is the reason why their cases collapsed, their charges were dropped, and the trial of Craig White was an absolute farce. It's old ground, how it's really frustrating the fact that we know that several crimes were committed against us, however, we will never likely get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
And all we will get is hearsay or people coming out afterwards and saying, yeah, I know what's happened. But it makes no sense. It makes no odds because they won't get hammered for it.
Yes.
And to be honest, I'm amazed that Charles Green hasn't been brought up on charges for erroneous contracts that were set up with Sports Direct, which clearly breached fiduciary responsibility. He's given them ridiculous contracts, which completely fucked Rangers over. He had a fiduciary responsibility to make sure Rangers got the best deal possible, which he clearly never done, and he fucked us over. So I'm amazed that there's no charges for that, but that's a story for another day, and I don't want to really get into that too much. So the last few bits and pieces here I've got is Odin Excuse is finally getting put out to pasture and will air for the final time at this Hogmanay for an 1 hour special. Dave, we always watch it every year, but
we do.
Thank God it's finishing.
We actually had a discussion with the guys at my work about this, and I can remember only an excuse from, you know, 20 odd years ago, Derek, where, you know, we all used to really look forward. I mean, I actually went and saw them live, Jonathan Watson, and it was when it was Tony Roper that he did it with, and it was absolutely hilarious. One of the funniest things ever, and, you know, we really did look forward to it, but I'm afraid the sort of last sort of 10 years, Derek, it's been pretty dire. It's been sort of, you have to tickle yourself to laugh at it. And then they end up having to go back to the old favourites like Frank McAvaney and guys like that to try and get the laughs. And even then, they're bringing in sort of non-football people into the show as well, which just isn't the same. I preferred, you know, the old originals, and it was just purely about Scottish football and taking the utter piss. It was great fun back then, but as you say, it's time that you know, it had its day, and we can remember the sort of good things about it rather than, as you say, we're watching it out of habit every year, aren't we? And then just complaining about the same stuff. So, and no doubt we will watch the very last one, Derek, won't we? We always do, but as I say, we just have to thank the guys. Only an excuse for the stuff that they've done years ago. It really was good, but it's about time that it happened.
Next thing here, Resolution 12 is back in the Celtic AGM. God. In the form of Resolution 11.
Dear, right, okay.
As we know,
fucking crackpots, right, on you go.
As we know, it's all to do with our UEFA licence that was granted by the SFA from 2010-2011. Celtic Board have recommended they vote it down again. They said last year that this was going to be the last time they voted in it, and still we're getting it again. Given the crisis that they're in just now, with their manager, with their team, the way they're playing, their EGM is still about us. Aye. And there's the difference between us and them. When we win, it's all about us. When they win, they still try and make it about us.
Yeah.
They are fucking deluded.
It's again, Derek, I get the feeling it's a bit of a deflection tactic again, isn't it? Because they are in such a disarray and they're playing so badly, and there are other things off the pitch as well which are looming. As well, it's like a bit of a deflection tactic. Their support, if that's what their support want to be talking about, there really are some major crackpots in there, because you know, the way that their team is going at the moment, I would be looking, I'd be demanding answers about my own team, never mind about our big rivals. But you know, it's a farce, Derek. We knew it was. It's pie in the sky. It's, you know, conspiracy theorism to its highest level when it comes to that mob. And the fact it is in their AGM about us, it speaks volumes. It really does. We are in their head 24/7. End off.
Next thing here is Rangers to broadcast live Indian Super League matches in the UK. So we have obviously managed to buy the rights of the SPFL and sell them in India, haven't we? So it seems to be a reciprocal deal, because Rangers are delighted to announce they have formed an innovative broadcast partnership with Hero Indian Super League to live stream selected matches in the UK, which has begun its most hotly contested 2021 championship season. So apparently, I think it's on our Facebook page, or the Rangers Facebook page, they're going to broadcast Indian Super League games, which is a bit mad. I don't know who's going to watch it, to be honest, but certainly if it helps broadcast, if it helps exposure of Rangers at some point, then it's always going to be good.
It does. I mean, Derek, there are guys, guys and gals out there who will watch any type of football that they can get if it's live on the TV. So I'm sure there will be people out there who will watch it. But again, it's a strange one for us, but it shows that we are branching out and trying to do different things, you know. And the fact that they have sort of got the rights to do that is just something that's never been done before by one club. So we've got to commend them for going down that. It's maybe something that they are doing to see how easy it is to do that, if maybe perhaps trying to spread out and do it in different countries as well. Who knows? But it'll be interesting to see what response they get to it and if it's successful or not. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yep, fantastic. And the last piece of news here is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre is once again WWE champion.
Well done. Right over my head, Derek, but on you go, mate. I know he's a wrestler, I know he supports Rangers, and that's about as much as I know about the guy.
I don't know what gave it away that he's a wrestler, Dave, when I said WWE superstar.
Well done, Drew.
So.
Sorry, mate. Right, on you go.
Dad of two jailed for having sex with farmers' chickens.
I'm a chicken.
I'm a chicken fucker.
A man has been jailed after having sex with chickens, having been sentenced to 30 months in prison in Burnley Crown Court on the 20th of November. Dad of two, Shane Waters, has previously been convicted of having sex with a horse and a donkey.
Oh my God.
Saying in a police interview that he could not control his urges in regards to sexual urges. 40 also admitted to having sex with his pet Great Dane, who bit him in... who would bite him and growl while he did so.
Oh my God. Right.
Waters came to police attention after a farmer found four dead and several unwell-looking chickens in a shed on his farm in Accrington on the 18th of September. After checking his CCTV, the farmer found footage of a man entering one of the chicken sheds, which had been bolted shut and remained inside for about 20 minutes.
Prosecutor
Barbara Webster, after the farmer had reviewed the CCTV, he went back and found 11 dead chickens. He formed a view that something sexual had happened to them.
Oh, no. Oh, dear.
Police were contacted while the RSPCA carried out an investigation, finding traces of Waters inside the two chickens. Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
After the arrest for offence relating to the chickens, an examination was carried out on Waters' dog, where traces of semen were found.
Webster said
in his interview, the defendant admitted going onto the farm intending and having sex with chickens. Oh. He admitted he had been on the farm on 9 previous occasions and told officers he would say sorry to the chickens when he was finished.
So he was a remorseful chicken fucker.
Oh my fucking God.
Oh dear.
I don't know where to go with that.
On that note.
I surprise myself sometimes because I generally pick out these stories and I read the headline and I read the first couple of paragraphs and I don't read anything else. So.
God. Aye, Derek. Again, for years and years I've been questioning your sources, but I keep saying I really don't want to know, so.
Yes. So on that note, you it's a podcast.
Aye.
So if as ever, if you want to go and check out what else we do, you can go to our website, which is iReadyPodcast.wordpress.com, and there you can find all the stuff we do, like all the other episodes, all the match reactions, and Dave, all the classic matches. And I even updated it as well last week, so he's got no excuses.
Oh dearie dear, okay.
So, look forward to the game on Sunday. Strange time as ever. I'll be back with a post-match podcast at some point. So, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Take care, folks, and we'll speak soon. Bye-bye.
And the stadium erupts in red, white and blue. You've never seen anything like it.
Let's go.
Disappointing decision from Scott Bain. He shouldn't be coming there. And all of a sudden, he's thinking Callum again almost gets back. And it's 4-1. You know, it's ultimately it's another 4 goals conceded. It's a disappointing evening. And strangely enough, it's hard to say this, but I actually thought the spirit was there.